July 11th, 2018. It's the Watch for Pedro Show.
Thank you.
Lot for Pedro show. Happy Wednesday, people. Brother Matt, he's back in Croatia. Well, not back. I mean, his grandpa came from there, so it's his first time visiting, but it's his family's land. And last week he was in Italy, and now Croatia, and it's actually his first big Europe tour. So, Brother Matt, I'm with you in spirit. You're here in Pedro's spirit. I am not totally man alone, though, because of the engineering geniuses there in Estonia who brought us the Skype software. I got Carl from Grex with me in New York City, he's calling from. Welcome aboard, Carl.
Glad to be here.
Yeah. I like your new record a lot.
Thank you.
Yeah, you did a great job. We heard on Green Dolphin Street in the last tour John Coltrane did with Miles Davis in Europe, 1960. And then from you guys, Feeling Squiddy. What's your earliest musical recollection, Carl?
My earliest musical recollection? Well, when I was maybe in my early teens, I got preoccupied with psychedelic rock, like early 60s psychedelic rock, or mid-60s, so Hendrix and Cream, Quicksilver Messenger Service, that sort of thing.
But you weren't in the 60s.
No, I'm way younger. So so I'm in my early 30s. I found this one when I was younger in the 90s. And I shifted over to listening to jazz pretty quickly after that because I heard Jack Bruce and Cream talk about Ornette Coleman. So that's what I got interested in when I was younger.
You knew about Jack Bruce talking about Ornette Coleman?
Yeah.
In the 90s.
Okay. Yeah, in the 90s for me, I was a child.
That's great. Tell me about the pad. Was there your parents listeners or music makers?
No, actually my parents were, they were just Filipino immigrants, so neither of them had any concept of music because...
What about Filipino music?
There was, the cultural differences were such that there was this fetishization of American culture. So it was all the Beatles and Santana and Michael Jackson in the household.
So there was no homegrown music in the home. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Because I know a little bit, because my pop was a sailor in Subic Bay, you know, Manila.
Right on, yeah.
So he had many trips there because of the Vietnam War thing. And so he would bring me things like plaques of Filipino knives and... actually, he did give me some recordings of that music, and very interesting. I know here in SoCal, we had a Filipino town. You know, those kind of things disappeared when people, you know, became part of the whole thing. You didn't really need.
Okay.
But I think we lost something in a way because, yeah, maybe stuff like that. Like maybe like in where you grew up, if there was in clubs or stuff like that that played some. But the people want to assimilate, right?
Yeah, the indigenous music is very beautiful, and there's a rich tradition. I've played with some musicians up in the Bay Area who are interfacing with that a bit. But yeah, in immigrant culture, at least where I came in, it was more to the side because yeah, there was this very big push to assimilate and be a part of America.
Actually, there was a lot of cats in Navy housing too. Pops were sailors that I grew up with, but you're right. Yeah, everybody wanted to be with the up-to-date. Yeah. I'm thinking, too, Philippine had big influence with Spain, so maybe the guitar, right?
Right. So there is a lot of guitar. And in the pop music, there's a lot of Spanish inflection as well, even in the various dialects.
Okay. And but, so you, how did you get introduced to the guitar?
I honestly wanted to play bass originally. I thought bass was a way more interesting instrument.
Oh, Jack Bruce, yeah, okay.
Jack Bruce, not yeah. Eric also,
Clapton.
I mean,
Eric Clapton.
But there's this
I think Jack Bruce actually started on cello. He's a Scottish guy. Incredible influence on me.
Yeah, as I got older, I actually got way more interested in Jack Bruce's music because it's so idiosyncratic and weird.
Yeah, it is trippy. One thing I read very nice, what Eric Clapton said, he said Jack Bruce taught him to sing with his whole chest.
Oh, the diaphragm singing, yeah.
Yeah, don't just keep it in the throat, you know, sing with your whole, you know, like a church or some shit. And I thought that was a good thing for Eric Clapton to say. Okay, so You wanted to be a bass. Okay, I'm trying to find out where music came in your life. Can you remember the first record you bought?
Oh, geez. The first record I bought, being a child of the 90s, was a Beck album.
Okay.
It was the album Odelay.
It's a good one. But,
yeah, so that was the first one I can remember. But then,
you remember the first gig you went to?
Yeah, it was Pharoah Sanders, actually.
Wow, he lived up there, right? Oakland.
Yeah. Yeah, when I was, it was in Catalina's, the old Catalina's, or not Catalina, yeah, Catalina's in Los Angeles, and I went there with my dad.
In Hollywood, yeah, I seen Pharoah there with Raymond Pettibone about 10, 15 times.
Yeah, it was just this really, it was a submersive experience. I felt like I was getting inducted into something, because it was just a weekday night, and I went there with my dad, who was also sort of uninitiated in the music. And Pharoah started the concert. He was playing soprano. He moved from the back of the room around me to get to the stage. And I just didn't know what he looked like at the time. I'd only heard him on records. And it was just, he had this tremendous sound. And I remember they played The Creator as a Master Plan for 30 minutes. And the audience was just screaming the entire time. It's just, I felt like this is what I want to do with my life.
I saw a lot of gigs there. And you'd be so close, like you say. I remember one time, there's a side room there. He went into the side room. He's wearing three pairs of glasses and sunglasses. And the band was young guys, you know. They didn't know what to do, you know. And the boss is in this room playing. Yeah. He was a tripper, though, and still is. And, you know, first embraced by Sun Ra and then John Coltrane. And he's still here with us, still going. I think he lives in SoCal now. What about school? Did you take any music classes, like a harmony or chorus or a school band or that shit?
I took several years of private guitar lessons with this guy out in Los Angeles, Chris Kenny. I think he was Eddie Money's guitar player, so it was a weird connection. But I didn't do a lot of formal schooling in high school. I was more preoccupied with sort of, you know, how free jazz. I was huge into free jazz. I still am, obviously. But I was huge into free jazz when I was younger, and I just felt like I couldn't get that kind of education in high school, which was, like, I guess, my fault. I probably should have gotten some more formal training earlier on. But when I went to college at UC Berkeley, and then I went to grad school at Mills. And that took up, I got a lot of my formal training on the job there and playing gigs.
How did you make the switch? Did you ever get a bass at first?
No, I picked up guitar and it just took up so much of my time.
Okay, but in your mind you wanted to do bass. You actually didn't do bass, okay. Yeah, they're kind of different. Who's that guy up there in the city? Charlie Hunter. He's got bass and guitar going on the same instrument, right?
Right, yeah.
Here, I want to play TM26. Curious title.
Started raining swords, and the slivers of the flame began tearing at my pores. The Temples of your skull started caving at the wake as we drifted out to sea, blood trailing in our wake. We looked at each other as the storm got the skin of our
ללמד אותי את הדברים החשובים באמת. לפרק את התקרה של האכסניה ולחפש למעלה סמים ברווח שבין גג לגג. מצאנו. מישהו היה מספיק נדיב ולא מספיק מסומם כדי להשאיר אותם. אני רוצה לחשוב, בקרמה לנו מוכבאים כמו נשק חם. ניר מלמד אותי מה חשוב באמת. LSD מורידים עם שורה קוקאין. רעידות של אקסטזי עם הרבה מסטיקים. עדיף לבלוע אופיום מאשר לעשן אותו. כשאתה גמור באמת, לך תשתיל ביער ומאפס. ומשפחה. הכי חשוב זה משפחה. אני אוהב שהירח קורס על המרפסת וניר שוכב בעסל כמו באמבט חלב. מרביץ בי הלכה. לפני כל טיסה תנקה את המבחנה עם חלב חם. אתה לא רוצה להסתבך עם המחלקה. אף פעם, אל תשתה מבקבוק מים פתוח.
Walks alone through the primeval, past various light posts signifying ways to doom. Who walks alone through the outer reaches where the bare limits are, cast off alone and cold? Who walks solo and bold? Who really walks alone? Who walks the wide ways? Who sails on a lonely plane, crying out for company, but you're never alone? Who cares for you when you are alone? Who walks there beside you whenever it is possible, who really believes in you when many just laugh, who knows the power of one who walks alone, who waits to ascend to the very throne. If you only knew, you never walk alone. Know now the power of your one-on-one to the bone. Know where you really are and what is shown. Who walks alone?
When you called it, you called it. I had not seen it. But when you showed me, I could not unsee it. When you thank you.
For Pedro Show, this is take two, which I hate fucking doing, but I didn't hit the record button, people. We heard TM26 from Grex, 45 Spire, Fight a Cave, Yamate Alex Zhang Huntai, Near Teaches Me Fire the South, Joe Brewer with Who Walks Alone, Anthems of the Void, Last Records of the Lost Herd, and File of Quicksilver, Grex. And we're getting to this into Carl here before college, but while he's in high school and grade school, and did he have, like, you know, the garage band, bedroom band, after school thing?
Oh yeah, there was a little bit of that. My hugest thing was that there was a big jazz scene around Central Avenue, in Los Angeles, and
you mean the old days?
50s. Yeah,
you're talking about the old days. That's when there was two unions.
Right. No, that was like way before my time. But
yeah,
the
before Watts' time too.
Are you familiar with Horace Tapscott?
Of course, I saw him many times. I've seen him do, because he used to run the Watts Jazz Festival.
With right, Roberto, those guys are my heroes.
Incredible Actually, he had two other guys. I can't remember their name, but he had three bass guys on stage. And, you know, the giant has arisen. And he had a wife, right? She had a club called Marla's Memory Lane. It's called Martin Luther King now, but it used to be Santa Barbara Boulevard. Raymond took me all these places. You know, I got to see these older cats. Incredible. But Central, I thought that was more 50s.
Oh, yeah, way earlier. It's just the people who kind of came from there. And I think Billy Higgins started a club out near Laymer Park.
Okay. Now, I know about that, Carl, because I worked at 43rd and Crenshaw. This club was called the Total Experience.
Lamert You're right
Park,
in there, man.
And actually, Laymer Park is Crenshaw. It's west of the freeway where the lot stuff. And Central Avenue, that's east of the Harbor Freeway. That's more Watts. This is called, well, the big code word is South Central, right? Big fucking racist tag. But there's kind of Crenshaw, which was a Brim's, Piru. They became Blood. And then the blue guys were Crips. I mean, that was just, it's every block or whatever. As far as that, but as it's black Los Angeles. But there was an east side and a west side. So, little difference, you know, that's interesting you know about this stuff, though.
Well, the history and geography I'm not super up on. I just know about the guys who kind of came out of it.
Billy Higgins, you know, incredible cat, played with Ornette, but also Miles. And I saw him at Catalina, man. If Billy picked you, you were going to be the guy. He's going to look at the whole gig, like your own personal gig. He's just beautiful, man.
Yeah, man, I love that guy's playing.
Yeah, beautiful. He's on that live, the one side live, Monk, one live, Miles, Straight No Chaser, that's Billy. Miles, because, yeah, usually he had Philly Joe Jones, right? But these guys, they were interested in community. You know what I mean? It was really trippy. They wanted to bring up, you know, so a lot of these guys, because I ask about the schools, they came up through the schools, guys like Eric Dolphy, even Charles Mingus, you know, Red Collender showed these guys bass and showed him bass and coming up. I was reading this book on Eric Dolphy. His daddy built him a practice pad in the backyard.
Yeah, he had a practice room like out in his bed. Yeah, so he could practice undisturbed.
Yeah, I don't think people realize that music was serious community stuff. It wasn't just something to get high and be crazy as shit like that. I mean, it was a serious thing. And I draw big inspiration from these guys because they were, you know, minority, okay. But minority, same way part of the movement me, D. Boone, Georgie were part of, you know. And you just, you build in from community, and that was really important. And when Raymond turned me on to this thing. So that's interesting. And how'd you find out about this? By reading?
I actually, by reading and my sister's ex-boyfriend's dad, he would always tell me these stories. He saw Ornette at the Five Spot. He saw Albert Eiler out in New York. He was stationed out there, like in the early 1960s. So he would tell me about this stuff, and I'd go seek it out.
What, like Sailor?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, because Clint Eastwood, you know, that's why he made that movie, right, Bird?
God, I did not realize.
Yeah, because that's some of the guys that would come to the clubs were sailors because they'd be open all night, you know, and these guys, playing avant-garde music for sailors. But it makes a lot of sense if you look at the big picture. I find it really cool though that you went and searched that out. That's important.
Yeah, I was hungry for that. That was the kind of community that I felt like I wasn't necessarily getting where I was coming from music wise, and I would find later on, I think.
But you said there was stuff outside of school. Some cats turned on to this stuff.
No, I mean it was just all older people. I just learned it
from
much older friends. Yeah.
But did you do like the garage band? You know, doing the, you know, Blue Oyster Cult, the Alice Cooper songs or something like that.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, definitely. I had friends, like, a little bit of that, but I couldn't find anyone who was actually interested in free music, which was really preoccupied with.
See, which was really good, I think, from we were lucky being 70s punk, because there was some of that stuff, like pop group, you know, wild stuff, coming from this movement that was totally anarchistic, you know.
Yeah.
In fact, I thought John Coltrane actually was an old punk.
Yeah.
I didn't know he was dead. Raymond played me, not Ohm, but Ascension. And it just blew my mind. I mean, I thought, you know, I came from Nagy-Hazen. I didn't know anything about this stuff, and it just seemed to go with the germs and nervous gender, you know, up in Hollywood. For me, you know.
Yeah, man.
I know that sounds like polar opposites, but same thing with the art stuff and Woody Guthrie and Walt Whitman. It all, like, came together for me in those 70s years and the people I met. So that's interesting. See, that's why I try to tell people about the movement that never really... As long as you don't put a genre, a tag on it, it can keep living because it's just a state of mind, you know?
Yeah, I think that's a huge thread for people of my age group or even a little older. Everyone comes through all those different styles of music, and it feels like one thing.
Carl, you said you went to Berkeley, you know, Cal, right?
Yeah.
Well, did you ever think about the East Coast and that other Berkeley?
I did, but it was more, I mean... Not to be too far away from my family, I also I was really invested in the idea of political activism. I actually have a policy minor, but yeah, I shifted over to music because it felt slightly more real and vivid to me, you know, for obvious reasons. But yeah,
you sure got a knack for it. Okay, tell me about the Grex.
Yeah, this band was formed at Mills. My I'd been studying with Roscoe Mitchell of the Art Ensemble.
Sure. Wow.
And Fred Frith. And those were my main guys. And they terrified me to
now
this day.
What band did he have with that guy, Tom?
That guy, Tom?
Yeah, Tommy died early of some weird disease. And he was incredible. He could play a bass with a drumstick and a kick drum. I think it was called Massacre Crew or...
Oh,
Tom, some with a C.
Tom Cora, Skeleton Crew.
That's it. What an incredible musician. God, did he leave too soon.
Yeah, that band was amazing. Now we're using this two kick drum thing live, and a little bit of that is a debt to Skeleton Crew. I mean, we asked Fred about it, so he was okay with it.
Okay. He was with this lady for a while in Tokyo named Tenko. Incredible. Now I think she just uses her voice. But an incredible musician. And I first heard him in Henry Cow.
Right, yeah.
All the album covers that have some kind of sock.
I've never asked him about that, but yeah.
Okay, so you're studying with Fred and Roscoe.
I'm studying with Fred and Roscoe, and it's these really deep dive, intricate, involved studies of improvisation as an art. And, you know... Both of them could be taskmasters in very different ways. Roscoe is more of like, he's just a strong didact and he's really big on work and really big on effort. And Fred is more inquisitive in trying to get you to disassemble what you're playing and all that. And it was just really tense. And so I would come home from studies with them. And my now wife and girlfriend, I would just ask her like, hey, do you want to play? And we would just write dumb songs, you know, about Star Wars or something like that. And it gradually became the situation in which I felt like I could play guitar most naturally because I could do the things that I was kind of told not to do during the day. And that's how that band evolved.
Kind of a release.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. But, you know, I think those guys were probably doing it with best intentions, you know.
Oh, of course. Yeah. I learned so much from those guys. Fred is actually, Fred's been a huge supporter of Grex. And I think it's because he recognized a bit of, you know, having both sides of really just playing and really studying as well.
Yeah. Do you remember the first Grex gig, or was it just for recording at first, right? Just for fun?
Oh, I think our first gig was my thesis concert. It was weird.
Oh.
But it was the one thing in the middle of all of these like really intense free improvisations and modern jazz pieces. We just threw this rock band, and it just felt right. It felt natural.
Yeah, that's always scary, huh? You know, the big joke is Thelonious Monk would have never won the Thelonious Monk contest. I remember, you know, Perkins had this band, Banyan, me and Nels was playing in, and we got invited to the Monterey Jazz Festival, and I was thinking, oh, man. So I said, fuck it, let's do Stooges Funhouse first. All these guys are sitting in chairs wearing sweaters. And we go out after John Scofield. I thought people were going to hate it. And the boss came up to us after, and he said, hey, all right, man. That was a pants shooter, I'll tell you. You never know. You know, it's so weird how music has gotten So it's different, and I think, you know, it's a marketing man's dream because they want these genres and all this. But for people really involved with the expression, it's really difficult. You got to navigate the right tag with the right bin, with the right, you know what I mean?
It's totally. It's tough.
Yeah, so I think maybe by you throwing in that band, that there was something in that way you presented yourself that you weren't doing it in the other ways. And even though, yeah, maybe a little cornier, a little dumber in some academic way, no, it was actually a vessel for to bring something out in you, maybe. The other things brought out things too, but this, I think that's why it kind of worked.
Yeah, I appreciate that. That's how you verbalize it in a really nice way. That's kind of how I feel about it.
All right. Look, we're at the end of the first hour, July 11, 2018. Edition Watt Pedro Show special guest, Carl from Grex. Hold tight for hour two. July 11, 2018 is the second hour of the Watt Pedro Show. Pedro Show. Start the second hour off with Mal and Luma. Rex, is that about a video game?
Well, those are about our pet rats. We keep okay. pet.
Thank God, something real. Okay. And then Nels Klein with a brand new thing. A guy from Bay Area, Scott Amadola. Sorry, Scott. He's a great drummer, man. And him and Nels has a new project called Stretch Woven.
Totally great stuff. Name. Scott, those guys are my heroes. Scott has actually been very generous with me in terms of playing and spending time. That guy's a great guy.
Yeah, well, I know him from the Singers, and now they've got this new project, Stretch Woven. And then we heard Carla Boswich with Lazy Crossbones.
Yeah.
Of course, they made music. Alan Ravenstein with Shoot This Dog. He was on the show the other day, a big hero of mine from Paraubu, you know.
Yeah.
Guided by Voices, another new album. Daily Get Ups. And finally, Quincy Grex. I played with a band here last month called Cat Scan, and the bass player was named Quincy. And I remember in the old days, what was his name? Jack Klugman. He had a TV show where he played like a corner. And this was in the 70s, you know, when the movement started. And so, like a lot of series would have the one punk show. And there was a Quincy, you know, one where somebody's killing somebody in the pit because they're drugged up or something. And he, of course, the corner solves the crime. And so there was this kind of name you would give to like a weekend punk, a fake punk. He'd be a Quincy punk. You know, it's kind of weak when you get too topical because the time leaves you by. It has no reference. You know? So after your thesis, what Grex do? A lot of your recordings were home recordings, right?
We did a lot of. I mean, that was the landscape of making music. From when I started doing it on a professional level was just nothing like what I'd been told it was. I mean, the accessibility of getting things printed, I think, I'd imagine it's significantly easier now than it was maybe 20 years ago, 30 years ago.
Geez, you would not believe it. It's not all bad new days, because there's some things got way more econo, and you said the P word, professional. I mean, you can have that in your pad. You can. And and I remember a day, you know, when for a major label, $1,500 a day you're paying somebody. And you don't own any of that stuff.
Yeah, that's rough.
about the good old days, I'm like, no.
Yeah, people of my age group, I feel like a lot of us don't even think about that because it's never really been that much of a question. Or we've never had to fight those kinds of battles. I feel like our battles are a little different, maybe.
Yeah, but that's okay. I think the material battles, if you're going to have to pick your fights, I'd rather pick the fight with the creative battle zone than the material one, you know?
Sure, yeah. Definitely.
So, that's always going to be the problem, but maybe it's a problem that shouldn't be solved, huh, being creative? I don't know. So, when it came to releasing stuff, because I noticed, you know, up on your website, so you, a lot of, how did that go? When was it time to things to come out as an album? Or did you go in thinking, oh, this is going to be an album?
I guess this is part of the whole DIY aesthetic. Like, when we started, I don't think we had any real idea of what we were doing. Yeah. We just kind of did it. Like, the first record we recorded that was just two-piece, just keyboard and guitar, we booked a room from 10 to 2 a.m. two nights in a row and just played clean through, and the 40 minutes of the record was just edited from that. So
like Miles Smiles and On the Corner.
Yeah, you don't hear like the screaming and like the chairs falling over and things like that.
All right, but that's an interesting thing to do because, you know, maybe people don't deserve so much filler. Why not edit?
When it comes to that kind of stuff, I'm all into economy.
Yeah.
Like, we're on tour now. You see someone do like a 20, 30 minute set. Sometimes that's all it is.
Sure. You know? But what about, you know, there is sense of tune. With your new album, I get a sense of tune.
Like in terms of composition or
That's what I meant.
Oh, this new album was deeply structured. That music has been that music, I think we've been workshopping live before it was recorded for maybe 3 years. We've been kind of just putting out what we had at intervals for the previous records. This one was a long period of going sick on stage. It was all workshop.
So, yeah, it was a contrast. Tell me about this tune, Martha. I want to play Martha.
It's about, actually, my bandmate's way better at giving the Martha blurb, but it's about the last of the passenger pigeons.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I remember reading about that. That's what her name was. Damn.
Yeah, it's kind of dark. They were at the point they'd be in these gigantic flocks that would blot out the sky when they came overhead. You'd apparently have to run indoors because just the droppings would just cover you if you were out in the street.
And I love statues of military men getting pigeon shit on there. Listen to Martha.
Does it feel, Martha, to be the last of your kind? When people stare, pay them no mind. What do you dream, Martha? Millions of wind beads darkening the sky. Please don't despair, Martha, caged in a past you can never repeat. Someday the night will set you free.
Yeah.
you know, there's always this thing about the Latin writers. Oh, they're always in the mystical and... No, they're good writers. Luis Borgia. In fact, I think Mr. Borgia was kind of into Mr. Joyce and Mr. Dante, too, Alighieri. We heard Martha from Grex and Mold Omen after that with Ron Instituto, no, with New Cathedrals. Isn't that a coincidence? Lucy Lee with Mondays, Black Lips with We Know, and Transpiration. Grex, tell me about Transpiration. That's a journey.
Yeah, the saxophonist at the beginning, a good friend of mine, Louis Jordan, he was in this band United Front, which recorded for FMP in the 1970s. They're sort of like an art ensemble of Chicago styled band, but they're part of this older wave of Bay Area musicians, many of whom are still around. And they're sort of underrecognized just because the press doesn't get out of this area sometimes about some of the locals. But yeah. All of these songs in some way, shape, or form are maybe about depression or, you know, confronting legacy and things like that. And it was nice to have, like, this little bit of brevity at the beginning. And then just the thing just turns into this, you know, caterwauling shred fest.
that's a good way to put it.
It's a process of movement of, again, I'd have to get my wife in here for the specifics. But, it's a process of motion.
Let's get into the process. Like for this structured album here, did Rain write a lot of the words?
It was pretty even. I wrote some of the stuff that she's saying. Some of the other things that she's saying, she wrote, but I wrote a lot of the lyrics. These concepts like transpiration, yeah. it's just water movement through plants, and so a lot of those scientific
all
terms,
comes from her work. Yeah, okay, yeah. Okay. That's neat about her working that in. D. Boone would really dig that. You got to make it part of your art. Make your work part of your art. He would love that idea. So when did you start this tour?
We started this tour, I want to say maybe 3 weeks ago. We started in Sacramento.
So I'm thinking New York City's like the halfway mark maybe.
This is maybe the tail end of our East Coast, and then we've driven cross country, and we're going to be heading back in a second.
Yeah.
But we played Boston yesterday, Providence before that.
So you're in New England, okay? That would be always like the turnaround part for our tours, you know?
Right, coming back, we didn't really plan for the drive, so.
Is it sweaty?
It's pretty warm, a little humid actually.
I was there 2 weeks to record with Raymond Pettibone, and man. Whew. But we had some little stokers here in SoCal the last few days, but nothing compared to that, you know, we're spoiled in California. But
we drove through the Southwest, and it was over 100 pretty consistently.
Yeah, but at least dry. That humid stuff is what saps almost all the energy I got. You know, and it can be like 70. You know what I mean? It's just, whoa. And not really a north-south thing. It's like east of the Rockies or west? Because Montreal, oh my God, I don't know if you've been there in the summer.
No, it's. I'm assuming it's pretty bad.
And like winter, it's just moisture, it carries heat in and out. Look, we're at the end of the second hour of July 11, 2018 edition of Watt for Pedro Show. Special guest Carl from Grex. Hold tight for hour three. July 11, 2018. It's the third hour of the Watt for Pedro Show.
马良好，你妈就是爷娘有钞票，辣海你个眼里我不是男人，没房子就等于没长胸肌，没钞票就谁顾没长
father, dear father, come. Nation. Second verse is like the first, but the words are rearranged. Completely different, not the same.
Drummer Sly Randall, he was playing this kit, and we brought up the story about Eddie Moore dying on stage, and he's like, yeah, this is the kit he died on.
Whoa.
Yeah, and he was just, I mean, it was just this real die-by-the-sword moment, because he's like, yeah, you know, you pick up the kit that he played on, and just, you're playing it at gigs, you know, several years later.
Warren Marsh, you know, tenor player, Raymond took me to see a bunch of times, he died playing, and he was doing this song Out of This World.
Right.
That's the perfect one to go out on, right?
That's
I saw a bitchin' gig with him, with no drummer man. Tootie Heath was playing like a rain stick.
Yeah.
And Tal Farlow and Warren Marsh. Three, you know, not your typical thing. And they put together a bad gig. It was in the lounge of the Hilton Hotel, you know, where Led Zeppelin, what they call it, the Ride House, or... You know, that one on Sunset? Yeah, Dezzo's daddy was booking jazz gigs there at one point in the late 80s. And anyway, we started the third hour with Round Trip from Grex. From China, PK-14, 1984, Part 1, The Top Floor Circus, 5 Million. And these guys live in China, but they're Lawais. Poor Benny, I got to play with him last week in Strong Beach. And finally, Saints, Grex. So, Round Trip and Saints, give us some insight.
Round Trip, I mean, thematically, that song is a little bit about the difficulty of coming to terms with just traveling to see family.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a lot of family strife embedded in some of our personal lives. And so it's just kind of dealing with that, but also attempting to be positive. I'd rather let... that might be best to speak about.
I think it's cool. If you don't even want to talk, some people say, "What? I want the song to do the talking."
No, yeah, totally.
I'm totally into that. Like, John Coltrane names his song Alabama. There's no lyrics. You get a feeling.
Yeah, the lyricism's all in the saxophone.
Yeah, so I can understand if you don't want to explain too much. Don't worry, Carl. I just said some insight. Now, you don't have to give it, you know, no Captain Crunch decoder ring thing.
Decoder ring.
And Saints?
Saints is just about, so there's this crippling burden of kind of doing something new and dealing with, I had so many nights of just like kind of being up late listening to Sonny Chirac or Albert Eiler.
I got to play with him. I got to meet and rap with him. Great.
Sonny Chirac?
In Buffalo, New York. It was after them riots and a weird gig that happened.
What was so weird about it?
It was going to be a festival at school, but they canceled it because of riots. 2,300 miles away, someone pulled a fire alarm. They thought the same thing had happened. So they paid me the money, and I said, look, man, if you're going to pay us, you should get a gig going. So they found a gay disco, and we had a gig there. Ika Mouse, Sonny Chirac. I was with, I think it was Blackgate Nelson. Yeah, and he was very kind to me. And look, there is the burden of this. I know what you're talking about, the avant-garde. And, you know, I know people from the Lower East Side, you know, the John Zorn thing. Like Sam Bennett, for example, great cat. He lives in Tokyo now. And what happens, just like, you know, no blue notes, right? No fucking flat thirds.
You know? Right.
But what happens, that becomes a shtick in its own self.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, here's the big challenge. You know, you could write a very original novel and not invent one new word. Or you can invent all the words and it'd be like Finnegan's Wake, you know, kind of hard to read. But this, I think this is always the dilemma of wanting to be different. When the reality is, if you look at your thumb print, you are different. Well, that's the way we use the arts to try to prove this physical reality.
Mm.
But we do share lots in common at the same time. So there's the dangling duality. My opinion.
Yeah, I like that.
Okay, what about this song, Husk?
That song is actually, and we announced it from stage, about crippling depression.
Wow. Do you know Psyllium Husks?
I mean, not much about it.
Yeah, you're not
yet
at that age yet, but man, it's a lifesaver. It's just the husk of a grass that when water hits it, it blows up like a sponge. So when it goes through your intestines, it just cleans you out, keeps you get all wrinkly there and shit.
I do have some older family members who've talked to me about them.
Thank you. Thank you. giants moved, the treetops swayed. And now the baby you see is the bones. Touches flesh that's turned to stone.
Some fur between the teeth. The boy he quietly espies. Out and o'er the sea. Echoes now into the sky. Seas turn to sand. He saw the mountains turn to land. He saw the seas turn to sand. He saw them.
Watch for Pedro Show, the last music for this edition. Grex with Husk. And then the SS Space Systems with Toyo Echo. Soto with Only Star. Yeah, I was thinking that because we lost Brother Steve Soto. He just did a gig. I think it was in Europe. Came home the next day, visited his parents, took a nap, and never woke up.
Oh, man.
Beautiful man. Like we were talking about dying on stage, maybe that's another kind way, you know. Not to get morbid. But, yeah, it's my antidote to the depression, right? Sort of like Ritalin, you just overload the system. Bummers. Four-dimensional nightmare with my school and the bubbles and God. And finally, Mango Mango, Grex. This is the big fucking jam for the album, Mango Mango.
Yeah, that's a long one.
Yeah.
We have a baby nephew who just, he's super into fruits. They're living out in the forest. They're living out in Quincy. And,
Quincy!
Quincy, California.
I know where that is. I played a gig there for a bicycle helmet company. Yeah, hey, Watt, will you play our bicycle company's party? And it was in Quincy, and they were having a giant mountain bike race up the mountain. It's kind of by Tahoe and shit, right?
Yeah, it's like, it's about an hour and a half out of Reno.
Yeah.
So that's the trip. Wow.
Okay, so it ain't Quincy punks. It's the town. Okay, so your nephew's eating mangoes.
He's just there. They're in a fruits out there. They're in a sustainable living, and like that's just the psychology of forest living. And yeah. He calls himself a fruitarian. He's four, and all he's doing is eating fruit. So he goes around just shouting mangoes and mangoes. And it's kind of nice because this kid, and it's just everything's so terrible. And this kid's just like, hey, it's fine if I get some fruit. Yeah. So
values change.
Yeah,
it's interesting. It's a beautiful song. I mean, I love the album. And I'm wondering about plans.
What's about plans?
Well, you got to get home from this tour. Yeah, the future Grex.
We actually over this album took so long to make that we have the material for another album already. But it's one of those processes of figuring out what it would sound like in the studio, and you know, the workshopping period for this last one was several years, so who knows? But I mean, this band works a lot. Like we're I'd like to think that we're big strivers, so something's bound to happen soon.
I think you're big strivers. where can people find you on the internet?
Well, you can find us. Our website is www.grexsounds.com.
Grexsounds, people. Grex.
Oh yeah.
You know, there's a dude from the city named Grux.
Yeah, I talked
about Rainbow Carolina. Well, it's always got a different last name, but it's Rainbow Carolina Dump Truck or Rainbow Carolina. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah,
I know this kid from a young. Well, he's a man now, but I knew him as a younger man, like Minutemen days.
Whoa!
And when I saw Grux came to my mind.
Actually, our drummer our drummer who plays with us. On occasion, Robert, he's on the record, was going to be the drummer for Carolina, I guess. Or I guess that's a secret. I shouldn't say that.
Oh!
No one knows. That's everything I said was wrong. Okay.
I was going to ask you about that. Sometimes there's a third member, right?
Yeah, Robert, he's very invested in the process of studying Brazilian percussion, so he's in and out. Sometimes, I mean, he could be, for all I know, Robert is on a different side of the world right now.
Wow. But, respect. They've got quite a tradition of that there. Incredible.
Yeah.
Man, even especially the north part of Brazil, man, some wild stuff, but the whole country, beautiful stuff. A little advice, somebody getting into music.
Oh, for my part, I mean, at my age, if you're going to do it, you have to stick with it.
That's great advice. I like that.
There's so many moments. I mean, just even on tour, you know, just the exhaustion of it. There's so many moments, if you're not prepared for it, where you just think, like, man, I could be doing something else. But if it's something that you love and it's something that's in your blood, you just have to be insistent. You just have to make sure that you continue.
I love that, and it shows in your music. It's been a great honor to have you aboard. I hope you keep on keeping on. Safe seas to you. Really, beautiful. Get back home safe and get that next record going, okay? I can't wait. And we'll talk about it when it comes out.
Yeah.
Okay. It's been July 11, 2018. This is Watt for Pedro Show. People, keep your powder dry.